Welcome to the newest episode of The Break Breakdown. I'm Courtney Romano, your host, and this is a podcast by Queensbird Films. I'm so excited for you to listen to this episode today with Lauren Kerman. She is an actor, a plus-size model, and got her big break on Project Runway. And Lauren's story is so fascinating. We went in so many different directions, just about, you know, how she started out, how she, you know, really grounded her confidence in her life, this crazy story about the South Beach diet book that she was given in college, and then just all the circuitous kind of nonsensical, non sequitur ways that led her to Project Runway and now beyond it into her acting career. And it really reinforced, this conversation really reinforced for me how important it is to steady yourself. Lauren has this really cool energy of just, you can tell she's taking it all in, but she's deciding and she's processing what to take and what to leave. And I think that discernment is actually really complicated for me. I will take in everything and wear it as my own. And, you know, in some ways that can be really helpful because it's helpful in telling stories to a degree, and it's helpful in empathy to a degree. And then too much of that is really powerful and overwhelming in a way that, you know, can make me feel unable to move forward, just completely stuck under the weight of it. And even just the way she talks and the way she processes things, Lauren has this really amazing way that she stays present but is completely grounded in her values and what she knows to be true. And there's also this added element of joy to it, and this added element of a sincere gratitude, not like hashtag grateful, hashtag blessed, like no hashtaggy stuff, like a sincere joy in what she's unfolding in her life. And, you know, I just needed to hear someone's story like that. And listening back to the conversation and listening to how she has processed how she got her big break, what led up to her big break, and now what's on the other side of her big break gives me so much gratitude for the steps that I've taken and the steps my friends have taken and where we all are and what we're all doing, because it really, you know, cliches are cliches for a reason, and it really is about the journey. And there's something so rich that we can tap into, that I think Lauren is tapping into, when we can make it about the journey. We can make it about grounding ourselves in our values and our own guiding principles, and then having this trust that life is going to guide us in the direction that is most aligned and most, just most aligned for us and our desires and our dreams. And, you know, we have our dreams for a reason. And when we can connect to them without slipping into these social and cultural institutional lies that we're fed, we can reclaim our power in our own destiny. And I think that, I mean, if every single person on the planet had the power, had a power to really shape their own destiny and be the most bright and influential and, you know, loving and joyous person, like, that's what we want, right? That's that's the end game. And I think Lauren, actually, her energy is right in that field of vision. And I think you're really going to love learning from her. And her story is so great. She's such a great storyteller. And yeah. All right. I'm keeping this intro short because, to be quite honest, we are in pre-production for Kinsley Versus. Queensbird Films is producing a digital series, an 8-episode digital series, and I have written it and I will be directing it, and I have a team of amazing producers and artists who are already on board with it, and we are in the thick of it, fam, like in the thick of it. So my brain is a little bit mushy at the moment. But if you want to stay up to date with everything that we're doing, the very best way to do that is to jump on the email list, the Queen's Bird list, which the link to jump on that newsletter is in the show notes, and to follow us on Instagram at Queen's Bird Films. There's going to be so much coming up. We've been talking a lot about screen test recently on the socials because it's gotten into 5 film festivals this summer, and we're really pumped about that. It's our short film that is about 5 fitness instructors trying to get on a reality TV show that could change their lives, you know, just casual commentary on social media and reality TV and authenticity and identity. So we've been talking a lot about that, but there's other stuff coming up, and after Kinsley Versus, there's even more coming down the pike. So anyway, if you are interested in what we're making and the stories we're telling, and you either want to get involved or you just want to be the first to know whenever there's an announcement, joining the newsletter and following us on Instagram is the best way to do that. And yeah, that's all I want to say. Really, I just want you to listen to Lauren. Enjoy this episode. If you like it, please share it on social and tag us. And as always, rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts and subscribing always goes a long way. Lauren's going to make you feel good. So get yourself a cup of tea, an alcoholic beverage, your 5th coffee of the day if you're me, and settle in because she's a good one. Here she is. Welcome to the Break Breakdown, Lauren. I'm so excited to have you here. I've heard literally only wonderful things about you, and I'm so excited to hear your story.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so freaking excited.
All right, so we're going to get into it. And, you know, when this podcast is out, I'll have done a little intro about who you are and kind of the story, the brief general synopsis of where you got to and where you're going now. But I want to kind of go back to the top. And because you live in New York City now, correct?
I do.
But you grew up in North Carolina.
I did.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So my family moved around a lot when I was little. We kind of every 3 to 5 years bounced from a new town to another town. Went from Ohio to North Carolina, back to Ohio, back to North Carolina. But when my dad was laid off when I was in high school, it turned out to be a big blessing in disguise for my family because it was the first time we really got to choose what town felt the most like home to us. And that turned out to be a tiny little town called Tryon, North Carolina, population 1,500 people. And I spent ages 3 to 8 there, grew up on the barbecue. And that's where my mom and dad are now.
That's awesome. And that's so interesting. So were you moving around because of work and all of that?
Yes, my dad's job, he was a project manager for a metallurgical engineering company. So every time a new plant would open, they'd bounce us to the new town.
They'd go somewhere else. I remember when I was a kid, we moved once within the same town, within the same school district, like nothing changed except our house. Uh-huh. And I remember my parents being like, well, we didn't want to like uproot you at all. And my parents are both public school, now retired public school teachers. So like there was really like our roots were pretty firmly like right where they were. But I remember like as a kid being like, oh my God, what if I had to move? What would happen? But it sounds like you were just like, yeah, sometimes you move and then sometimes you stay.
Yeah, it was such a strange learning experience. And I'm really grateful to my parents because something really wonderful about them is that they were really intentional about maintaining our family friendships in North Carolina, especially in Tryon. There was a great group of kids I'm still friends with today. And, you know, our parents were friends growing up. And so every summer, even though we had moved, we would come back to Tryon. And in terms of confidence, that was such a great reset for me because it was like, oh, I'm reminded of the fun, wacky, happy-go-lucky kid that I really am that sometimes was lost in translation as the perpetual new girl in a new town.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, that's so interesting. It and how cool that your parents were like, let's keep those connections going. I feel like that's something that we do more now just because of social media does like kind of superficially help us keep those connections. So it's more in our brain. But very interesting that you're talking about like coming back to a group and coming back to a community to build up that confidence again. And I'm wondering what your biggest source of confidence was as a kid.
Yeah. So another thing my parents did when we were moving around is they'd always try to find ways to plug me into the new communities we were in, which normally involved, even though we weren't really religious people, it normally involved like joining a new church.
Yeah.
So the Karamans really ran the gamut of Christianity there for a while. Like we were Quakers once because they had the good volleyball team. So as sacrilegious as that is, it's true.
I love that.
And then they also put me into the community theater plays. So I really have all the moves and my parents to thank for building my love and introducing me to my love of theater when I was little.
Yeah. And also it's interesting thinking about building that muscle of rebuilding, yeah. You know, of redefining. And I think that's actually a muscle that I'll speak from like the I instead of the we, but I have been scared of in my adulthood that now that I am at the point that I'm at, I'm like, oh no, that's the muscle. Like yeah. That's the one, like keep yeah. reinventing, keep rebuilding, keep redirecting until it feels right and feels good. But like very cool that you got that experience as a child as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I love hearing you say that because I've never really thought about the ways that it probably did, build that muscle in me from a young age that I was more easily able to bump and weave.
Right.
And in such a big part of my path in my career and my life, there's been a lot of huge surprises and bumping and weaving that I just said yes to. So yeah, I really thought about how moving around so much as a kid probably made that transition a little easier.
Yeah, it's or like you were like, oh, I have this skill set, which feels yeah. not like a skill set when it's, I think when it comes from childhood, you're like, that's the way things are. And then as an adult, you're like, oh, let me unpack all of this that I've for better or worse. Okay, yeah. So tell me, how did you know then you're kind of going, you're playing volleyball, you're in North Carolina, you're in Ohio, you're in all these different places. And then the moment comes where you're going to go to school for acting. How did that choice come to be?
So I love this story. So I was in the seventh grade when I knew I wanted to be an actor. And I was on vacation with my middle school best friend and her family in Florida. Mm-hmm. And one of the days of the vacation, we took a day-long sailboat trip. And the captains of this ship were a couple named Bruce and Sheila. And so we get on this boat and we are just watching Bruce and Sheila in awe. They are so happy. They're living their best lives. I'm like, how do you have this amazing life? You're clearly so joyful. You get to be out on the boat all day. And by the end of the trip, my friend and I are sitting, by the wheel, Bruce is steering, and we say, Bruce, how did you get this amazing life? And he goes, well, Sheila and I, for 25 years, we were in corporate law and we hated it. And every free moment that we got, we were just out here on the boat. And so finally I turned to Sheila and I said, Sheila, what are we doing? Like, what if we try to make our hobby our career? And as a seventh grader, I really clocked that. I was like, wow, I could have an amazing life too like that. What's my hobby? And acting was my hobby. And that was the moment I just kind of snapped for me. And the next thing I know, I'm doing summer sessions. I'm going to boarding school for high school for acting. And then it all kind of unraveled from there.
Wow, that is so interesting because I feel like, first of all, The characters Bruce and Sheila are so perfectly named.
I know, so great, right?
I'm like, I know exactly who Bruce and Sheila are. And I love them.
I love them.
But it's so interesting because I feel like a lot of times people reflect and they're like, well, I saw this show, or, you know, and for you, you were looking at it in a bigger context of like, I see happiness, I see joy, and perhaps some effusiveness. And what was the strategy, Bruce, that you took to make that happen? And then when he told you, you were able to kind of mirror that and parallel that into your own life and be like, oh, then I guess that's his point A and this is my point A, and off I'll go.
Yeah.
There's something so brilliant about children who keep it so simple.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I always want to be like that.
Yes. Oh yeah. I feel like I'm constantly just trying to get back to that, you know, get through all the other stuff and get back to that. Okay. So you get to school.
Mm-hmm.
David Gow, who was, for people listening to this podcast, know him from Screen Test, the short film we did last year, one of many, many, many things he does. He's a brilliant actor. And he told me that you are one of the best actors he's ever worked with in his life.
Well, that is a huge compliment, David, and it can be absolutely reciprocated to him.
Yes. That
is, I mean, he's unbelievable.
Yes, yes. And you two met in school. Is that correct?
Yeah, we met in school.
And there's an interesting story that I must have read either on your website or in some other research when I was reading about you and your whole story, about the South Beach Diet book.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me a little context about where you were in college, what that whole experience was like, and then what happened with the South Beach Diet book?
Absolutely. So when I was in school, one of the greatest principles they wanted to instill in us was the idea you are enough. The more grounded, open, present, vulnerable I can be in my everyday life, the easier that is to access when I'm in the space, when I'm behind the camera. And I really took that to heart, and that really has changed my life to this day. But come my junior year, that mantra started to get a little muffled because I had professors saying, well, girl, maybe you're a little too much. You're not going to find the success you want in this industry unless you lose weight.
Wait. Sorry. Not to sidetrack you, but too much. Like,
oh yeah. Like you weigh too much. Like you're enough, except you weigh too much.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
So cut to my junior year. The way NCSA was set up is we did our main stage shows junior and senior year. And so it's the first rehearsal for my first main stage show. We have all the tech team in the room that we're privy to witness this to. And the director, who is one of my professors directing the show, she starts handing out all our scripts, but then she gets to my seat and she goes, oh, Lauren, I forgot I brought something from home for you. She goes to her bag. She pulls out a South Beach Diet book and sets it down in front of me before she even lays down my script. And I'm 19. And at that point in my life, I'm really not surprised by this. I had a horrible relationship with my body and my body image and with food. I'd been on a diet since I was 8 years old.
Oh, wow.
8 years old. I mean, I'm a 9-year-old kid who goes from being happy, go lucky, to now apologizing for the space I'm taking up in the world. So that had been exhausting for the past 11 years, just constantly yo-yo dieting, starvation dieting, and binge eating. And I don't know, it was when I had that such a stark moment of being handed this book, it was my wake-up call of what parts of this industry and this toxic messaging that I'm getting all around me in society about my body and the standards it should be, you know, what part of all of this am I going to accept? And what part of this do I have to reject? And I was realizing fitting this body standard that my body was very clearly, through years of practice, never going to healthily be. Mm-hmm. It wasn't worth sacrificing my mental, physical, and emotional health. Mm-hmm. So for the first time in my life, I didn't do the diet. And I was thinking about it. It's now been 10 years since I did a diet. I'm 29 now. That was at 19. And that's pretty cool. But yeah, that was really my pivot point in seeing, yeah, there are a lot of parts of this I can no longer accept. And I don't want to continue to punish my body because it's not a toxic standard that I don't even believe in myself.
Right. And when you say like punish your body, as if your body did something wrong.
Exactly.
Like, you know, and yeah, I got chills when you said the last 10 years I haven't been on a diet, because presumably those would be the most successful 10 years of your life so far, mm-hmm. you know, and I understand yeah. it's like out of school, but you've had a lot of different, you know, paths that you've followed. Why do you think, and we don't need to like psychoanalyze a college theater department, because that, like, nobody has time for that. There's just so much to say about every college theater department. But why do you think there was this kind of duality or dichotomy of you are enough, and then a space where someone feels, not only is it appropriate for me to go out of my way to give a kid, because you're 19 years old, like, you know, I know you're in college, but you're still like a kid to a degree. Yeah. Give yeah. her a diet book when she didn't ask for that, and also do it in a group setting.
Right.
And then also, like, so poetic that it's like, before you get this script,
yeah,
let me help fix the issue. Like, how do both, I guess my question is, it seems like both coexisted in the theater acting department where you went to school. And I wonder if you see those things coexisting in other places in life as well, where it's like, yeah, you're enough, but also you're enough because you've done X, Y, and Z, and this kind yeah. of battle.
Yeah. You know, I think a big part of it, at least back in school, is what I was finding is there was a huge disconnect between the authenticity that we strive for in the artistry and this quote unquote standards that are being placed on us in the industry.
Right.
And that definitely has been something I've seen to exist as I figure out my way as a professional out of school now. But I find that really detrimental for a young artist who wants to engage in the marathon and in a long lasting career as a holistic artist, because we're kind of being trained that those two, the industry and the artistry, isn't all. And that's a gap that I hope can be bridged.
Yeah. Yeah. What I hear you saying is like, there's the artist's path, but then there's the business path, which is why also I hate capitalism, and I'll say it as much as I can. But it art and capitalism are often at odds with each other, because it's like, well, I want you to be the greatest, most wonderful, grounded actress you can be, but mm-hmm. what does that matter if you can't make money because you can't, you know? So it's always like money is always trumping authenticity. But what's fascinating about that, and what I'm learning as I talk to people, and I think through your story specifically too, is that that's actually a lie.
Yes.
Like money, shooting for the money first. And I've done it. We've all done it to a degree, right? I've been like, well, I need to do X, Y, and Z because that's the practical way to sustain my bills, you know, or whatever it is. We've all done that, but actually, like, the thing that opens up and like kind of quantum leaps your world is when you are the most yourself.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you can predict what's going to come from that. And oftentimes you can't.
Yeah.
But you can't really predict the money route either, because you're depending on other people.
Exactly. And it's so much more satisfying to come at your life from a place where you are the most grounded in yourself that you can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, I look back on it now, and it's the moments in my life where I did feel really in touch with myself and my own artistry and my own principles, and didn't waver them, that I can look back and be really proud of myself and find and get so much more juiciness out of the entire experience that I had in whatever project that was.
Yeah. You can be Bruce.
Yeah. I can be Bruce.
Okay. So she gives you the South Beach diet book. You're like, thank you. No, thank you.
Oh, which is kind of crazy. That reminded me that was like, no, I never told her I didn't do the diet. I just held on to it the whole rehearsal process and play process. But then I put it back in her cubby in the office, and I just put a post-it note on top that said, thank you. And I knew what that meant. And that happened.
Oh, I love that as like almost like a sacred ritual or something, or like a spell.
It was.
You're yes. Like, I release this. I release you. A friend of mine who runs this amazing website called Holisticism, Michelle Pelazon, she's like literally a witch. She's amazing. She says there's this spell that you can do, which is to say, I do not consent to X. Like, if someone's coming at you in an email, or someone's coming at you, maybe even on set or anywhere, in your household, your partner, your relationship, you can say like, I do not consent to anger. I do not consent to the South Beach diet. I do not consent.
Ooh, I love it.
Yeah. But that's the kind of energy that I feel like you had in just being like, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And goodbye. I love that. Okay. So you put it in the cubby, you pack yourself, and you go to New York.
Yeah.
So what was that transition like?
So that transition was funky at first and very unexpected. When I decided I wanted to be an actor, the path that was laid out for me was super linear. It was decide you want to be an actor, go to as many acting summer programs you can go to, transfer to a boarding school for theater in high school, get into a top conservatory, get an agent at a showcase, then that agent will get you into the unions, then you'll book enough work that you're a recognizable face by the time you're 25. So that was, you know, so easy. That was my whole plan.
Okay.
And when I went to showcase and didn't get any agency meetings, it was like, oh, I don't really have a contingency plan for what to do now.
Right.
And that was such a loaded bag for me because of all of the newfound attention that professors had been placing on my image, because I started to think, and I say this next part, not to stroke my own ego at all, just for the sake of this story, but something I did leave school with was a big sense of validation in my talent and in the work that I was putting in. So I felt great about that. And when I didn't get any meetings after that, I thought, fuck, maybe they're right. Maybe I should have done the diet. Maybe it was about my weight. And luckily, I was in a strong enough place in my life that I didn't revert back to diet culture, but it did send me into this funky place of, well, what the hell do I do now?
Right.
So I moved back home to Tryon, and I'm like a 22-year-old, you know, discouraged actor working at our summer barbecue festival. So just imagine me, I'm like, sad actor with a megaphone just yelling, Reese's, get your Reese's potato salad available here and at your local Piggly Wiggly. So I'm like, well, this is my life now. and I'm at this barbecue festival, right? And my friend from college, Tim Tom, he calls me and I take the call and he goes, "Darling, do you have an apartment in New York yet?" And I'm like, "No." And he goes, "Perfect. My roommate got a job in Maine for 3 months. You're the first person we thought of. You can move in as soon as this weekend." And I don't know what came over me, but I just said, "Oh, hell yeah, I'll take it." So I run over to my mom who's selling t-shirts across the fields. And I'm like, "Mom, I'm moving to New York this weekend." And she was like, "Great, get out of my house."
Good mom.
Great mom. And I shit you not, Courtney, 10 minutes later, I get an email from a casting director I met at school, someone who has been just so influential for me and my career, because she was such a proponent when I was at school of telling my professor, "Stop telling this kid she doesn't have a place in the industry and stop telling her to lose weight. She's just been amazing." And so she emails me and she asks, "Are you in New York yet? I have an audition for this Robert De Niro movie for you on Monday." And I'm like, "Holy crap, it's Friday." By Sunday, my mom and dad and I are driving me up to New York. I move into my apartment, I do the audition, and it's 7 years later and I'm still here.
That's incredible.
Isn't that wild?
It is so wild. And yet it's like that things that the Stoics said about writing good drama is that it's surprising and inevitable. Yeah. It's like you're of course, like how on earth did those two things happen 10 minutes apart when you're standing, you know, like passing out potato salad, but also like, of course it happened that way. Like, yeah. Of course it happened that way. Like it couldn't have happened a better way. Right. Like that was the path. Wow. So you get to New York, mm-hmm. you audition for the movie, mm-hmm. you have an apartment, you kind of like lay down your roots.
Yeah.
Was there, okay. But now we're getting into the big break that you had, mm-hmm. which was Project Runway. Was there a moment when you were like, "I'm going to model"? How did that happen?
This probably is the biggest surprise of my entire life. So I never in my wildest dream ever expected to pursue modeling, become a model.
Would you? Because people are handing you stupid books in the middle of rehearsal.
Exactly. I was like, "I'm not a freaking model." But I have my friend Casey to thank for that. It was about a year after graduation and things had been going really well. I was navigating my way without management. I got my equity card through a project that a director had recommended me for that I worked with before, and some really cool stuff was happening. And I went to lunch with one of my friends from school and we were just talking about the industry, and this is about 6 years ago, and we were talking about all the body shaming that we're seeing in the fabric of everything. And the plus size modeling industry at that point was really just becoming a big thing. Mm-hmm. Articles were coming out, brands were expanding their sizes, it was becoming a part of the cultural conversation. And Casey looks at me and she goes, "Lauren, have you ever considered doing that?" And I just laughed in her face. I was like, "Casey, have you met me? I broke my foot one time just walking off a curb. Like, I can't be a model." Okay, like, no.
Can't walk in high heel platform, whatever. Yeah.
Runway, I'm going to fall off the freaking runway. Like, that's not going to happen. And she goes, no, you would be perfect. Let's go to an open call. What better way to be a part of the way the fashion and entertainment industries are starting to change? And she was completely right. And so the next thing I know, we're at an open call and I'm signing with my first modeling agent, which is insane. And it completely changed my whole life. And yes, professionally, but more so personally, because in order to really do that work, I realized there was a lot of personal healing that I needed to go through and a lot of unlearning if I'm really going to allow all of me to be seen. And I started to evaluate how the guiding mantra for the majority of my life had been these three words: when I'm skinny, when I'm skinny, I'll be happy. When I'm skinny, I'll get an agent. When I'm skinny, I'll book the work that I want to book. When I'm skinny, I'll get a boyfriend. I remember being a teenager thinking, when I'm skinny, I'll join a folk band. Like, what? What does that have to do with being skinny?
Right.
And it was like this, you know, very toxic mindset that was in the fabric of everything I was doing, keeping me from really allowing myself to even look at myself fully in the mirror. There were parts of my own body that I would just actively avoid every time I got ready in the morning. And yeah, so evaluating those thoughts that both consciously and subconsciously were a part of me, I started to replace that with a different mindset and evaluating the stories that I was telling myself about my own body, so then I could actively be not only for myself a part of the change I want to see in the industry, but an actual example of what it means to unlearn these things and now actively try to positively impact the industries I want to be a part of.
It's interesting that you're talking about those three words, when I'm skinny, because I think a lot of artists have something akin to that, whether it's when I'm skinny, when I have money, when I'm, you know, in New York or in LA, or when I'm something I'm not, right? Exactly. Something I'm not right now, like whatever that thing is that you're putting so far ahead of you. And it's really interesting that you had those three words as kind of like a barrier. And then when you, I guess, like put them on the shelf, for lack of a better expression, we're like, okay, you just sit over there for a minute. You were able to fully embrace who you were. And again, like I said earlier, kind of like quantum leap it, you know, like kind of like move time really fast and book a modeling agent, like have a conversation and book a modeling agent, you know? Yeah. I don't really have a question about that. I just think that's really fascinating. And I think, like, I just want to underline it because I think that it really applies in a lot of ways. And also, so interesting that you're like, let me evaluate why I'm saying this to myself inside myself, because I feel like so many times there's obviously messaging we're getting from the world all the time, but some of it is so deeply ingrained, you know, that we don't realize it's not our own voice.
Exactly. And what is that voice? That was a big part of my unlearning, because I finally came to a point where I said, who even decided that my body was supposed to be that way? Who am I even listening to? This strangely omniscient stranger presence that is now a stronger perspective in my own head than my own.
Yeah.
Boy. Yeah. So it's like, what makes my own perspective less powerful than this underlying voice that I don't even know, I can't even pinpoint where it started to infiltrate my mind.
Yeah. Like for me, I'm like, I like the voice in my head, I'm not sure if she's a woman or a man or non-binary person. I don't know, but like, you can't pin them down, you know, like, and that's what's so slippery about it is like, if you could rationalize it, but it's just permeating. So you get into this situation where you're like, okay, now I have a modeling agent and now I'm, and you still don't have an acting agent, right?
No, I didn't have a modeling agent until this year. Mm-hmm. First managers I got for acting were 7 years in, baby.
Which I love. I have to say,
me too.
When I was acting, I didn't have an agent for a while. And then when I did have an agent, they were very nice, but they wanted me to dance on cruise ships. And I had explicitly said, I don't want to dance on cruise ships. Uh-huh. I want to do XYZ. And they were like, all right, but here's an audition for a cruise ship. And everything that I booked came from me. Everything that I booked, they negotiated, or they didn't negotiate. They just took 10% or whatever it was. But it was one of those things where I was like, what is this agency thing? My career is the exact same, except there's more friction because I have to say no to stuff that I would have not been doing had these people not been in my life. So I think whenever anyone is kind of free and easy like that, I say like, it's fine. You're going to be just fine, which clearly you were, because you then booked Project Runway.
Oh, let me tell you this story.
Please do.
Okay. So when I booked this job, I booked the first season, that Project Runway ever hired plus size models. And I was originally booked as an alternate. So what that meant is I just had to show up to all the calls, wait 20 minutes for the other girls to show up, and then I got to go home. And well, it came the day for the finale runway show taping, and my call was 4 a.m. So I'm thinking, okay, I got to get up for 20 minutes and be here at 4 a.m. I'm going to eat a freaking huge TV breakfast at least, you know? So yeah. I'm like, eat my first bread. I got my big shades on in the studio, like inside with the fluorescent lights. I'm eating like one breakfast burrito, two, three. I had my fourth. I'm like, cool. I'm going back into a coma. I'll be asleep in 30 minutes. It'll be great. And well, 30 minutes goes by, an hour goes by, an hour and a half goes by, and I'm thinking, who messed up and forgot to tell me I can go home? And well, the next thing I know, Paul, the producer who's in charge of all the models, he's British, he comes over to me and he's like, Lauren, darling, it happens. You're on. How fashion is that, right?
I love it.
And so Paul sweeps me up and puts me in hair and makeup and in the outfit, and I meet my designer, and I ended up getting to open her collection. And this is my favorite part. She comes up to me and she says, thank you so much. I have to tell you something. I don't believe in accidents. And I have to tell you what happened leading up to this. When we were originally picking our models, I messed up and I wrote down that I needed 2 size 4s instead of a size 14 and a 4. I'm a size 14. So when my model showed up, I didn't have a size 14 model. I had already made this dress for a size 14, and they were like, too late. The size 4 has already been on camera. You're gonna have to make it work with that model. Lo and behold, it was the size model that was wearing the size 14 dress that didn't show up to work that day. So I serendipitously now am walking in a dress that was originally made for my body size.
For your size, because it was the size 4 model that didn't show up?
The size 4 model that was wearing the 14 dress.
I got you.
And it was a beautiful dress. It was an A-line dress with all of this intricate beadwork, and you know, a size 4 frame and a 14 frame is so different that when it was on my body, you could really see all the embroidering, but on a smaller frame, it tends to kind of fold into itself.
Right.
So it was just, I mean, the designer and I just started crying. We were like, this is amazing. Like, you can't write this. How powerful for something like that, completely outside of our control, to happen on the first season, this mainstream network show is deciding to make such a influential change for the industry.
Right.
That was cool.
What's so beautiful about that story too, is that by you being exactly who you are, you allowed that other artist to be able to fully express their vision on you. Not because you were trying to fit into it, but because there was a place for both of you to be in that conversation together, to have that fullest expression of that design.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's amazing.
So cool.
So when you were kind of on call for Project Runway, was that in and of itself like a big leap moment? Like, I can't believe this is happening. Or did it feel almost like being quote unquote an extra on set? I don't know how else to kind of.
It was interesting. I had that. I definitely try to always take every opportunity as a gift, but I definitely had my messy moment of when I learned that I booked the show, but then later on I learned I was an alternate. Mm-hmm. So then I had that, you know, maybe every artist in New York has had this moment where I got on the train and I just got into a squat and ugly wept. I was like, yeah. Oh, I thought this was going to be the, you know, the moment.
Right.
But it's, I'm so grateful that it happened that way. Now looking back, you never know what's going to happen, because I filled in the finale. I didn't have any time to be nervous, and my energy on set was really up and it was really happy. And, you know, it's 5 a.m. and everybody else is just cranky to be there. But I was like, I can't believe I get to do this.
Right.
And the producers took stock of that. And yeah. So I had Paul whisper in my ear, your energy was so great on set today. I'm going to try to get you back as a series regular next season. And he did.
Amazing.
So then I was a series regular the next season.
And that, like, you can't underestimate the power of that, of, I don't want to say of a good attitude, because it's more than that. Like, yeah. Then the power of gratitude for being there. I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast before, but I had a therapist once a long time ago who said to me, like, she was an actor turned therapist, and we were talking about my career at the time. And I was like, I don't know what it is. I walk in the room, I'm smiling, I'm singing the right things. Like, I'm doing this, I'm doing all the things, but I can only get so far. Like, I just can't cross that threshold. She was like, Courtney, because I understand acting in the audition process, and I'm a very empathetic person, if I were the director sitting on the other side of the table from you, the actor, and you came in doing all the right things, smiling and all of that, I would be like, wow, I think that girl needs a hug. And and I'm so empathetic, and I have so much to do today that I don't have time to deal with that. And I would say, thank you next. And I was like, but I'm smiling. Like, I didn't.
Oh, I so relate to that.
Like, I didn't get it. I was like, but I did the thing that people told me to do when I walk into a room. I'm kind. I'm not kind out of being like fake. I am a kind person, even when I'm depressed and anxious and sad. But anyway, I'm just juxtaposing those two things, because people know what the energy is. You don't have to stand there on Project Runway and be like, hello, everybody, I'm so happy to be here. You can just let your presence, you know, speak for you. And clearly it did so much that, again, it moved Paul and the team there to say, you know, we want more of that. And I think what it also makes me think of is what you said before about, like, you know, doing that inner work. You can't have presence. You can't change the energy of the room with your presence if you haven't gone, like, way into the belly of the beast. You're in the finale. You're crying. It's beautiful. Paul with his accent is like, when I get here, you get on.
Totally butchered.
Paul is great. I was like, ooh, I want to meet him. So you're on the next season. So this is like a big. Now this is a real legit big break. And I think a lot of times people think, like, quote, when I get my big break, when I'm skinny, when I'm rich, when I'm married, when I'm divorced, when I'm whatever it is, right? So I am curious, on the other side of that big break, how did your life change?
There definitely were a lot of ways that it was so positive for me in my modeling career, and in terms of just really giving me experience under my belt. But I think the biggest change that it had for me was personally, because now I found myself in this wildly unexpected career, right? I never expected to be a part of that. I now love, but at the same point, especially in the beginning of my modeling career, and Project Runway was still kind of towards the beginning of it, I was finding I was putting a lot more energy into that part of my life versus the acting part of my life. And I was experiencing a lot of artistic dissatisfaction because of that. So it was interesting when I achieved a very personal goal I had from my modeling career, which was to be a part of something mainstream that was becoming more body positive inclusive. I remember also a big moment for me was when I booked Lane Bryant for the first time. That was like a big, okay, wow, that was a goal that I really, and a dream I really wanted to accomplish. And when I accomplished those for myself personally, I realized, oh, there's another space within me artistically that I'm not giving the same care and attention to. Mm. And so it was kind of after achieving those milestones, and then really all of the time that was then, which then was kind of thrown into our faces because of the pandemic, mm-hmm. I started to really reevaluate, am I squeezing the most out of my life that I can be? And where can I start to change my habits so that I start to work towards the same goals in my acting life that I have been all these years for my modeling life. Mm. And that's when I got my new management team. And mm-hmm. I realize now, 7 years later, all the wealth of experience and growth and healing that I had as a model and those quote unquote breaks, they made me such a more full multi-hyphenate artist that helped me to connect now with this acting team that I really love.
Right.
So that's the biggest change I found for myself after booking that show, is that it really just kind of started the domino effect of, all right, now what next? Like, what steps am I going to take next to achieve the next thing I want to achieve?
Well, and it's interesting. It kind of sounds a little bit like, and I've had another conversation recently with a guest about this, where you get that big break and it kind of uncovers what you really want to do, because you're fixated, right, on achieving this one very narrow thing. Mm-hmm. And then you do, and yeah. You're like, well, where do I go from here? And that question is something we can ask ourselves at any time. Exactly. We don't have to wait for something to happen to say, where do I want to go from here? Those moments in life are helpful. You know, mm-hmm. like the birth of my daughter was helpful for me to say, where do I go from here? You know, but I can also ask myself that today. And that yep. can lead me down a path that is completely mine. And I think that's really important for people to remember. And by people, I mean me. I'm talking to myself all the time. But that these are landmarks, and they are amazing things, and they are thrilling and poetic and beautiful and scary and exciting. And you always have access to that other side of the big break. You always have access to what it would mean to, I guess what I want to say is, like, whatever you think you would get after achieving a big goal, mm-hmm. whatever space you think you would be in, you can be in that now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a little heady, and I didn't drink enough coffee to like really follow myself there, but I think it landed.
okay. It did.
So one thing that my therapist asks me, which I love, and I think about it every day since she's asked me these kinds of questions, I think about them every day, but it's this idea of like, what is this thing that you're holding on to keeping you from? You know, like for me, it might be control. And what is control in motherhood? What is that keeping me from experiencing as a mother, right? And I'm thinking about like the women's bodies and mm-hmm. the way that they've been reduced and mm-hmm. diminished into, you know, either make a baby or be incredibly sexual, or, and don't mix those two. For the love of God, moms cannot be sexual. You know, like this whole, there's all these constraints. And I'm wondering from your perspective, being really inside of this body positivity movement, what do you think this constrained, antiquated idea of how a woman's shape and size should be, what do you think that idea is keeping us from as a society?
I think it keeps us women away from our power. If we're constantly distracted and bombarded by thousands and thousands of images a day, ads, commercials, everything we're seeing on the screen, we're constantly bombarded with images that just toxically misrepresent all types of female bodies. How are we not conditioned to constantly think that we need to change ourselves or fit some kind of toxic mold? I remember a few years ago, a study was done that found 67% of the women in America are a size 14 and above. So for reference, that's my body size or above. Yet less than 2% of our images are seen in all of mass media. Just imagine what that kind of both between the lines and in between, you know, both in between the lines, or just imagine what that kind of bias does to us. And if we're constantly being taught as women that we're only worth what other people think about our bodies, that completely crafts the way that we move through the world. And I see it now as just a manipulation technique to keep women down. It's a distraction to keep us focused on other things other than stepping into our own power. And what a shame that we have to spend the time, the years, it took me a decade, to deprogram and open up the mind space and the heart space to then really just settle into who I've always been. And that's so far outside of what this toxic societal standard is telling me I'm supposed to be. So I think there's so much power in our own perspective. Like I was saying earlier, what makes this looming societal toxic masculine voice more powerful than my own perspective? So really retraining my own lens. What stories do I tell myself about my own body? What parts of my own body do I want to see differently? Who would I really be if I loved my body? That's such a different conversation than, well, I'll only be happy, full, whole, successful, beautiful if my body is this other thing. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, running the hamster wheel. Even at the thinnest I've ever been in my life, I still wanted to be thinner. Mm. This kind of platform for success of, oh, if I finally am a size 4, I'll be happy. There were times I was really close in the very unhealthy times in my life to being a size 4. I wasn't fucking happy.
Yeah.
I was still worried about what everybody thought of every single roll and scar and double chin, any single quote unquote imperfection that I found on my own body. And it's like, okay, let's stop looking through that lens that like my body has imperfections, start looking at every single thing as perfect within its own right. And that's transformed the way I live my life.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. It brought up for me this, I bought a bathing suit recently. Mm-hmm. And, my body has absolutely changed since giving birth, and my daughter's 2.5. So it's been a minute, but it's still not, it is not what it used to be. And I mean that in like, I had a C-section, an emergency C-section. So it was really fucked up. and there's this something called like the C-section shelf, because uh-huh. they cut into your body, and not to be like, you know, like overly graphic or anything, but then they sew you back up, and like, there's, it's not like a smooth line like it used to be, like of just a curve. It's like, you know, this fun thing. And that it really bothered me at the beginning because it was such a traumatic labor. But then now I'm like, oh, I love my scar. I love this thing. And I was buying a bathing suit recently and I was like, I need to just measure myself because I don't know what size I am anymore. It's fluctuated so much in the past, even 2.5 years. And I realized that I was a size up from what I normally would wear. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hell yes.
Because, yeah. You know why?
Because I'm going to put that on and I'm going to feel amazing. And no one knows what size it is. And also it doesn't matter. Like, if I am going to feel, I want to feel good in the clothes I'm wearing now, not for what I hope to do later or what I long for in the past. Like I want to feel beautiful this summer in this bathing suit. Mm-hmm. And I texted my friend about it and I was like, again, fuck capitalism. Try to make me buy whatever sizes or strive, whatever. But I think I think you're so on, like, just like on the nose with like, you get your power back. You get your voice back. You get your, and in that is your intuition. You know, that we stifle, like you were saying, you thought you did all the things right in college, right? Meaning like right for you. And then you don't get the agent and you think, wait, I'm going to second guess myself now. And I think our intuition is incredibly powerful and can lead us in the right. I mean, when has our intuition, if we've actually followed our intuition, ever led us down the wrong path?
Amen.
Like, it just, even if we think it's the wrong path, we look at it and we're like, oh yeah, no, that was right.
Oh yeah. And looking back on it, you're always like, oh my gosh, that did not happen the way I expected. But I'm so glad I just took the risk and followed my gut on that thing.
Yes. 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 Okay. So I want to ask you just a couple more questions. I'm always like, hey, these will be an hour. And then I'm talking to people for like, I'm just like going over all the time. So I want to be respectful.
I have all day. So we good.
Oh, great. We'll just do like a marathon.
All right. Yeah.
I would love you to talk about your body positivity campaign.
Oh,
36, 24, 36, right?
Yes.
Can you just tell us a little bit about that really quickly?
Absolutely. So the 36, 24, 36 project, we named after the coined term for the quote unquote perfect measurements for a female identifying body, which we all know is bullshit. And it was really an attempt to call out that our bodies are so much more than the measurements the ways in which we're taught to measure our worth and our beauty. And how this photo series, so what it is, it's a series of photos and stories where the participants who choose to be a part of the project come to us and talk about the different places on their bodies they hope to see differently, tell us the stories about their bodies and their relationship with their body image. And we take really close-up photos of these often stigmatized places on a woman's body. So stomachs, fat rolls, scars, bony bits, stretch marks, all of these places that so often I personally found myself actively avoiding when I looked in the mirror. Well, what happens when these specific places are honored in a way that they then become art on the gallery wall? And so this project was another example of a big surprise in my life. It happened. I never expected to get into the fine art world. That was another big surprise. But what happened was I reached out to my childhood best friend when I personally was going through a dip in my own body image. My body was changing. I felt like I was reverting back into my old mindset of diet culture. And I just felt like something had to give. So I asked Ashley if she would take pictures like that for me. I just wanted to explore what it was like for my stomach to be totally exposed and to take photos of my body in that intimate way, never thinking it would go anywhere. And then when I looked back on her monitor and saw this picture of my stomach, it was the first time in my life where I couldn't argue with myself. It was a stunning image. That was the part of myself I hated the most. And now I couldn't stop looking at this photo. So it was such a cathartic experience for me personally that we decided to open it up to other people. So we just named the project, we made a website, we opened it up and we said, anybody that wants to take part in this experience, come on in. And then the next thing I know, we've photographed nearly 100 people.
That's
and which was so amazing. And none of the images are shared without the participants' approval. It was always so important to me that this isn't about us. This is about each individual's experience and the journey of healing and unlearning. And everybody wanted to be a part of it. And we had our first gallery show in DC. And then we were given a gallery show in Manhattan, where at that point, we'd photographed 68 people. And my friend Rachel came on board, who's now my partner. She's one of the most amazing human beings I've ever had the privilege to know. We had photographed at that point 68 people, and all 68 people wanted to be a part of the gallery show. So we got to showcase over 70 images, and it was just a grid wall of all of these beautiful images of everybody's different beautiful bodies and quotes, because we also, part of the project is we ask everybody a series of questions. What part of your body do you want to see differently? What stories do you tell yourself when you see that part of your body? Who would you be if you really loved your body? And what hopes do you have that would arise when you see these images and when other people see these images? The answers were so moving and so honest and so raw and vulnerable that we also, in the gallery show, blew up some of their quotes and had them running through the images. And it was such a powerful experience just to have the participants come to Manhattan and see themselves celebrated up on the wall all together. Yeah. It was such a cool thing.
And such an intimate story that we tell ourselves in our own heads, mm-hmm. that when you see other people kind of grappling with their own intimate story, there's so much power in that. You know, there's so much power in community and in building connections between people's pain, you know, or people's shame, which it sounds like there's, I mean, you know, there's so much body shame and the thing with shame is it gets less powerful the more you shine the light on it. So it sounds like that's exactly what this project was. Mm-hmm. Like a de-shaming.
Ah, really? Yeah. The process of releasing shame and welcoming more peace and celebration. Yeah.
That's beautiful. All right. Just a couple more. I promise I'm going to wrap it up. So I want to know what you would tell someone who maybe has been told to lose weight or has been told in some way to change some part of themselves in order to succeed in whatever industry they're in. What would you say to that person?
I would say people along your path are gonna give you their two cents, whether it's toxic or not. And I know this is so much easier said than done, but you have the power to let that two cents in one ear and let it fly out the other. If I could go back and talk to my younger self, I think I would really just encourage myself to continue trusting myself and trusting who I was learning that I was and trusting my own boundaries and my own principles, because despite the mixed messages that I was getting about this industry I wanted to enter, it's been so much more fulfilling for me to stay true to myself and who I am and not try to fit any kind of toxic mold that I was encouraged to fit with the best of intentions from these professors, right? You know, toxic ideals are not always spread with toxic intentions. So,
right. That's such a great point, because they do become so like embedded in our neural pathways. We just repeat them without even thinking.
Exactly. It's a cycle. And so I would encourage anyone getting crappy advice like that to acknowledge the cycle, acknowledge who you are both within it and outside of it, and choose what you're going to accept and what you're going to reject, and make sure in all of that you're continuing to show up exactly as you are. Just show up.
What does success feel like to you?
It's funny. It's so different than when I was little imagining what being a successful artist would be. Now I just really feel that, you know, success is enjoying all the pieces of my life. You know, it's being able to have a full, rich experience where I'm using my auditions as the joyful opportunity to get to act that day, or keeping myself stimulated in the down periods and finding joy in that process, even though I'm not booking anything. And then when I do book, it's having the audacity and excitement to really dive 2 feet into those projects that I get to work on. So I see success now more as something that's holistic to my whole existence, because one job or one relationship or one milestone isn't all of the sudden going to make me a full grounded, happy human. It's the culmination of all these little pieces that can be sticky or wonderful, or surprising, painful, or just freaking wonderful, that have now impacted the person and the artist that I am. So I find my life is a success if I remember to just enjoy it along the way.
I love that. Lauren, this has been so great talking to you.
It's so fun, Courtney. Yay.
You're so wonderful. And I can't wait for people to hear this episode and connect with you and see the work that you're doing and readjust those ideas of not only success, but the path towards it and how to feel more whole on it. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you so much for having me. You're amazing.
Isn't she great? She's great. I hope you really enjoy this episode. Please follow Lauren. I have put all of her social handles and her website and everything in the show notes. So please go see what she's up to, what she's working on, and follow along with her journey. And I hope this was helpful and as inspiring to you as it was to me. And I am, as always, so, so grateful for you being here. So thank you, and I'll talk to you soon.